jingle now. That's our jingle now. Editor. Dominic, future Dominic. That's our jingle now. You don't have to put the actual song in. You don't actually have to put the actual song in anymore. That's our jingle now. There we go. Gotta have the Daniel scream. My goodness. It's crazy. It's been pretty much 2 years since he did that scream, and it still goes down in infamy. The best soundboard right here. Ladies and germs. Welcome back to the studio, everybody. I want to get my original soundboard back. The one that has like the, you know, where is it? There's none of them have it. It's so sad. Why'd they get rid of it? It was so good. It was so good. It had everything. It had everything you needed. But now apparently the big people upstairs, apparently the guys in the white robes and the freaking satanic symbols are going against me. Rhodey. That's the name of their god apparently. And I won't stand for it. The worshippers of Rhodey, you better freaking watch out. I have you on a list. I'm gonna convince you in debate. I'm gonna convince you in public debate that you shouldn't be doing this. You really shouldn't be doing this, honestly. Honestly, it's kind of disrespectful. If I do say so myself. Look at those levels. Oh my goodness. Welcome back, everybody. I feel like a beast unchained. Just for context, I was doing a little bit of a guest appearance on Carissa's show regarding a book. I forget the name of the book, but it was a very messed up book. And they had ASMR to pad it out. A little bit of a sensual whispering in the ears of the listener. Don't you like this audience? But you like the old louder stuff too, okay? You gotta wake up. There's still midterms to do. Wake up. You still got midterms to do, buddy. Wake up. I'm slapping you right now. You gotta wake up, buddy. You still got midterms. I'm so glad I'm not doing schoolwork right now. It's a bit of a grind with the work and that I'm doing right now. But in reality, it's not as bad. This is like my summer. I have to savor this moment. There's a lot of projects that I have to do, though. It feels as hectic as a normal school term, to be honest with you. Because I got the radio show. I got my D&D with my buddies. I had to do a promo, which will be out next week. Advertising me? Who could have seen that coming? My goodness. The radio waves are not prepared for the amount of influx I'm gonna get from my beautiful, beautiful, booming baritone voice. And, of course, some other things that I shall not disclose here, except I can, actually. There is another D&D, a Dungeons & Dragons campaign that I'll be running with my coworkers. Isn't that crazy? Like, when I got into this job, I didn't expect to actually, like, integrate with the people that well. And the crazier thing is they asked me to host it because I've been playing D&D for 6 years. Dungeons & Dragons has been my bread and butter since I was in grade 7 when my grade 8 teacher introduced it to me. But they have never played. It's interesting. All of them have referential knowledge of Dungeons & Dragons except for, like, maybe 2 or 3 people. But in reality, no one's actually ever played it. They've only seen references to it. One of them seen The Big Bang Theory, which is actually the first time my dad showed me that episode when Sheldon, the funny Sheldon, does the funny thing where he sings a song, and he sings it with perfect accuracy. I shouldn't be a hater, but Big Bang Theory, you know, hey. It's different strokes for different folks, that's all I'll say. But Big Bang Theory was, in fact, the thing that kind of got it on the radar, so I have to give it some credit. I gotta give it some kudos for the instantaneous arrival of Dungeons & Dragons in my life, which then spiraled out of control once I got access to podcasts. Here's a little rant. Shh, it's okay. Imagine POV, me putting my fingers over your lips. Shh, it's okay. Why do so many people, okay, there's, whenever you're playing D&D, you can pick your species or like your race or whatever you call it, right? Which is basically, you know, elf, dwarf, all those kind of, like the Tolkien races, obviously, but then also like the created races that they've made in the games and kind of got inspired from earlier editions of Dungeons & Dragons, right? There's three There's three different types of creatures that they pick when they're trying to pick a species, right? You got elf, obviously. I mean, that's classic, iconic, right? You got tiefling, if you are if you want to show off your style and what do you call it, repartee of the fine arts, right? And obviously number three, dragonborn. I think dragonborn makes sense because it's like the most recognizable thing, and who wouldn't want to play as a dragon, right? It just makes sense. It just makes sense. You have immunity to certain damage types. You have some sort of breath weapon. You can shoot fire or acid or cold or whatever you want, man. It's up to you. It's based on the color that you pick. You can choose whatever the hell type of damage you want, right? It's just very funny to me. Specifically, the fact that they always tunnel vision on Dragonborn. You know, I probably would be the same, right? I think one of the first characters I played had to be human because in first edition D&D, you didn't have all these fancy smanty, all these coolio different types of classes and races. No, these were different. You didn't have the different types of class. You didn't have different types of races. This is Groundhog Day. I'm gonna say it over and over again until this is like a torture method. I'm so sorry. You didn't have these types of races, specifically in first edition, because they were merged with the type of class that you play, which is stupid because you play a dwarf and that's it, right? You don't play as anything else. You can't play like a fighter dwarf or like a druid dwarf. You're just a dwarf in the first edition. In fifth edition, it just makes more sense that you could be anything else. Anyway, that's pretty much my little rant over. Now, the reason why I played Suburbia Overture, Greetings from Maryville, I think this is, what is this? Hold on, I gotta get the full title in. I love how Will Wood just titles all of his songs with the most longest name imaginable. Here we go. Suburbia Overture, / Greetings from the Maryville Township, / Vampire Culture, / Love Me Normally. It's crazy to me. But here's the thing. It talks a lot about specifically culture. It talks about games. It talks about putting the pieces together of a puzzle. And what better thematic dressing? This is so last minute. I'm so sorry. This is funny. But like, I was like, oh yeah, this guy talks about puzzle games. And we're talking about the evolution of daily games. Now, these are abbreviated to, of course, the dulls, which we'll get to at the very end of this timeline. But as we start, we'll realize the evolution of daily games as they come out now. Now, you might be wondering specifically, what is a daily game? What do you mean by a daily game, right? A daily game, by my definition, is a game that you play that changes every day, right? Specifically regarding the puzzles, we're talking about crosswords, we're talking about connections, we're talking about the mini crossword, we're talking about Wordle, we're talking about all these different types of games that cropped up within the past 5 years. Starting with, of course, Wordle, which is the reason why they're called the dolls. But specifically speaking, there are so many more daily games outside of this New York Times bubble. But specifically, how did we get to the New York Times connections and Wordle and all these different types of games? How was the landscape shaped to accept this sort of cultural norm of doing these in your boring lecture and doing these when you're just killing time? Why do we do cereal box? Why do we have a maze at the back of the cereal box? How did crosswords even get popular in the first place, right? Why didn't the New York Times latch on to crosswords, and how did that develop over the course of the past century? We're gonna go back, all the way back, to where the first crossword puzzle first originated, right? We have our guy, Arthur Wynn. He did a lot of things, actually. He was a violin player for an orchestra, which then he ditched and moved to New York, where he was doing the editorials for the New York World newspaper, not the New York Times. The New York World. They were two separate things, two separate entities in the early 1900s, right? Here's the thing. He was in his office. He was just typing on the typewriter or whatever they need to do, the print, and then using an actual printing press to get it out, which is crazy to me. The fact that we've had the printing press for around 500 years, and it was pretty much the standard until the last century, until the last, like, maybe 50 years even. In 1913, December 21st, he was obviously running out of time. I imagine he probably had to go back to his wife. It was the Christmas weekend or something like that. He had to go shopping. And he needed to use some space. He was like, oh, no, my freaking... Hey, Baba da Booby, my freaking space on this newspaper is all jumbled. I don't have any more things to talk about. Some guy just caught a squirrel and the stocks are going up. I guess that's it. We're in the best times until World War I and II. What am I going to do? So... he sought some inspiration from other word puzzle games. Of course, these kinds of puzzle games were that intercept letters, clues, and logic puzzles, and other assortments weren't invented by him. There's examples like stretching all the way like 1,000 years ago to like ancient China dynasties and stuff like that, who used to do this kind of stuff, to do this kind of play with words and letters and numbers and all that kind of stuff. But this was the first time he was able to efficiently create a puzzle that could go out to many people daily, right? The New York World newspaper goes out every day, and every day you can make a new puzzle, right? Which allows people to talk about the puzzle and see if other people got the same solutions as you. So, since he needed to use the space, and not realizing about the catastrophic, I mean, I guess apocryphic, the sort of fate that he sealed us in this puzzle-themed world. He printed a small diamond-shaped grid and wrote clues for a little word puzzle that he called a word cross. Not a crossword yet. We're not at that point yet. The crossword actually got invented because of a typing error. They used to call it a word cross, word hyphen cross, and then eventually, probably like a decade down the line, eventually people started mistyping it. Is a crossword a cross puzzle? I can't decide. It's crazy to me. It seems like these are arbitrary words that we're calling these things. So they called it a crossword. It just stuck. It just made sense. You know, word cross is a bit more of a mouthful than crossword. So, Arthur Wynn, he creates the puzzle. The first crossword, which then becomes a big hit. He starts doing this every day. The New York World becomes way more popular because of this specifically. And a bunch of other people started to enjoy and partake more frequently in the crossword. Others wanted more. They thought it was an interesting idea that allowed them to flex their brain muscles a bit. Just to get in the rhythm of thinking a little bit more laterally than they're used to, right? This is the beginning of the crossword craze. I wish I had, like, hold on, wait, the crossword craze! Hold on, wait.
I'm really excited.
There we go, that's good. The crossword craze! Anyway. The crossword craze was a sort of mania, apparently, that took over the entire world, or at least in New York, and expanded out to the entire Americas. The crossword craze was infecting the minds of everybody. Men, children, women, everybody. So... obviously, this had a very good impact because a lot of different publishers got into the limelight, got into this craze very early on, and started publishing their own crossword books. You've probably seen them in the dollar store before. Those are centuries old, or at least a century old. Those reach back all the way back to this specific time period when people were doing crosswords religiously. However, like all new inventions, out of all people... it was the New York Times that thought crosswords were a bane, were a scourge on human existence itself. A scourge to the minds of Americans that must be rooted out at all costs. Okay, they weren't that crazy about it, but still, they were quite adamant that this game causes some sort of mania, some sort of addiction, some sort of absolute craze that causes their fathers to neglect their children because they constantly are asking for the crossword, disrupt the behavior in libraries to obtain dictionaries. It's very interesting, actually, because this seems like the most believable out of all these stories they've told. And murder. Oh! 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 The crossword killer coming this Friday. Honey, put down the crossword, please. Honey, it's okay. Honey, I need to know, what's five down? What's five down? Another word for boy. Honey, what's 15 across? Another word for the Turkish Empire. Turkey in the past, 15 across, tell me now. Holding the pistol, shaking the pistol while he's crumpled the crossword in his other hand. Honey, please! Please, I don't know! The doctor won't tell me! The lawyer won't tell me! Surely you must know, right, honey? Right?
That would be a fantastic, like a B-movie plot. That'd be fantastic. It's like, oh my goodness. It makes me want to be a film artist, because I can just, like, go crazy with those kind of ideas as a whole. You know? I could give the birth to those ideas and put them out in the wild. Anyway, besides the point, it's interesting specifically to see that the fact that the New York Times was the sort of instigator, not of the, at the beginning at least, they weren't the instigator of making crosswords, but they were actually the detriment to creating crosswords. They thought that crosswords were an abysmal idea to get in the hearts of Americans. They thought it was just drivel. They thought it was just poppycock or something like that. You know, that's more British, but you get it. They probably had a bit of British influences back in the day still. Besides the point, the crossword was a very, very controversial topic. However, it was also very good, you know, in a lot of places, it was very habitual, a very nice tradition to keep. You know, families got to get together and try to figure out what the clues were leading you to. They got to exercise their brain muscles a little bit. And fill in those blanks, baby! You know what I'm saying? And, I feel like, here's the thing. If we look back to the modern era for a second, we can look to see, obviously, the detriment of the internet as a whole. The fact that we can stop, we don't have to talk to people anymore and just, like, you know, we can just, like, Google the answers ourselves. It feels like cheating. It exactly feels like cheating. Which is not, like, conducive to solving puzzles anymore, which is kind of the reason why these things have fallen off recently, right? But the New York Times pivoted, which is interesting. Obviously, we can see the future and see all these games that they've come out with, and they're like, okay, back then, back in like the early 1900s, they would have thought this was absolute drivel. They would have thought this was nothing, right? So some bane of an idea to even like partake in enjoying, right? Because if you do, you could be doing something else, right? Which is true, but at the same time, it's the reason why they had to eat their own words. It all goes back to World War II with the bombing of Pearl Harbor. What? Excuse me? Wait a minute. The bombing of Pearl Harbor. What does this have to do with anything? No, audience. Stay with me for a second here. Stay with me. Stay. Tragedy befalls us all. Tragedy befalls us all, okay? And the idea that instead of actually having to worry about our problems and putting them away, it's probably better for the most part. For a problem that you can't really solve, it's better. It obviously leads you down a slippery slope of logic that could lead you to making choices that would actually pertain to the overall landscape of things. But in reality, we don't really have a lot of sway in the political landscape unless you are more influential. Unless you have more of a, you know, stake in the world, right? So, by that logic, the editors of the New York Times were like, okay, guys, okay, fine. You know what? We should probably put, like, a crossword in here to, like, you know, chop up the idea that, you know, more war is coming when we finally, like, kind of sort of vanquish the Nazi threat. We need to make sure that the spirits of the people are alive. We need to make sure that their souls aren't crushed and they have, like, some sort of distraction. It was also after the Great Depression, too. So, like, the newspaper was cheap enough. They could spend some money, they could just, like, you know, fill it out, talk to their fellow man about their answers, talk to their wives, their children, whatever. Their spouses, whoever needs to talk and learn about the damn crossword, you can talk to them about it. And you can share answers and stuff like that, right? Basically, case in point, besides the tangent, the editors felt bad for people as a whole. They felt bad for, like, the state they're in. So they're like, okay, fine, we give up. Get your damn crossword, but I'm not happy about it. You get your crossword. And that was the smallest snowflake that led us to the point where we are now. Now, here's the thing. Here's the kicker. We have a little bit of setup before we actually get into the whole idea of the crossword becoming a cultural phenomenon as a whole. We set up at the start of the 1950s. I think it was a Jewish creator who made what was called Mastermind, a board game that requires you to guess a code that the opponent has made. Now, with this specific game, you have colored pegs that you have to slot into specific holes that allow you to make a guess, for example, right? And stop me if you've heard this one before. You get tallied up based on how many match and how many don't. Sounds a little bit like Wordle, doesn't it? Interesting. Very interesting. Now, Mastermind obviously has a few differences. One, it doesn't tell you where you actually hit. So it's a bit more of a guess and guess, you know? It's a bit more trial and error. If you didn't get them the first time, you can still deduce when you'll get them the next time, right? But at the same time, it's a bit trickier. Excuse me, I'm so burpy today. My goodness. I made some cabbage pork casserole. It was delicious, but at the same time, it just gives me so much gas. One moment. A little sippy from my cuppy. Okay. We're back. So Mastermind specifically was a sort of guessing game. A code-cracking game, but also a guessing game. You had to guess in a limited amount of times what the opponent's code was, what they made. And it was a very engaging game. I've only played like 3 times, don't get me wrong, but it still teases the mind a little bit. You have to parse, okay, you have this many hits based on the guesses that you've already made. What do you think the next permutation would be that would allow you to get more information, right? A lot of these types of games are just trying to get more information based on the information that you already have. So, that game came out. And then the computers started to guess it as well. They started to create their own games. It actually started in the 1960s, which is crazy to me because the first like actual published game was somewhere around the 1970s with Pong, right? But it was simple enough for a game, a more simpler game, of course, which was called Bulls and Cows, which is what the actual Mastermind game was based off of. But instead with colors, you just have numbers. One number 0 to 9, and you can guess any permutation of those numbers. The computers start to be able to automate these types of games. And then, with specifically the boom of the internet, the dot-com era, back in the early 2000s, we skip time a little bit further up. And eventually, in 2014, the New York Times expands to the online realms. In 2014, which I am surprised by, it started with the mini crossword. And also, I think Spelling Bee, which no one plays. I'm sorry, guys. We don't care about those types of games. The mini crossword is interesting because it's just a smaller crossword. There's less, you know, it takes a lot less time. It's just a simple, more simple crossword. They can do a lot more with it, especially because it's less complicated to make a bigger crossword like that. And a bunch of other news outlets, different newspapers also started making their own online games. There was the Cryptic Crossword, which is a similar variation to a older version of the crossword that involves not clues to the answer, but in fact riddles. More so of a coded message that you have to decipher. These are one of the games that are on our list right now. A simpler version, the Minute Cryptic. It's just one cryptic message that you have to uncover. However, with the era of these types of games, they started to get more popular. They started to get more traction. I believe that they said themselves, New York Times said themselves, that their games section is actually giving them more revenue than their news now. They joke that they actually are more of a games company than a news company. Isn't that interesting? The fact that they've, in the first iterations of the crossword, they were so against it. And now that the internet has finally shaped into the form that it is today, they've accepted it. In fact, embraced it. Took it as their own, as if they were the ones at the very start of it. But in fact, they were not. They're only charlatans in their quest. Also, they got rid of the mini crossword recently. They made it a paywall, which is pissing me off. Get it back! Give me like at least like a weekly crossword that I could do. You know, like, come on, man. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? Anyway, we're finally at COVID. Sorry to say, we're back at COVID. 2021. It was about, it's probably like the last third of the COVID pandemic era. Within 2022, it was about to close off. And in October 2021, a inventor called Josh Wardle, a software engineer, software developer, and overall adorable little fellow, created a game, a prototype. It was actually a prototype that he made back in 2013. Called Mr. Bug's Wordy Nugs. Guys, I just want you to know. Please stew on this for a second. Ponder with me for a second. The Wordle, in his inception, when he first came up with the idea for Wordle, which, by the way, if you haven't noticed, is a play on words off its own name and also word, was originally called Mr. Bug's Wordy Nugs. Mr. Bug's Wordy Nugs. Mr. Bugs! Wordy Nugs. I'm going to be calling the Wordle from now on. I just want you to know. I'm just filling you in on the details here. That is what I'm going to be calling the Wordle. That's what I'm going to be calling the Wordle from now on. It's Mr. Bugs' Wordy Nugs. Why didn't he keep the name, man? It's so sad to me. So sad to me. This is like the best name for anything ever. It probably wouldn't have gotten the same publicity deal because it blew up. I remember so many people were playing it back in the day. I remember so many people were engaging with the Wordle. People were asking, did you do the Wordle? It was like the crossword boom all over again. Isn't that interesting? Because again, we were back inside. We didn't have anything to really do. The pandemic, again, made a cradle in time for a game to emerge out of the woodwork once again. Like what happened with the Great Depression and specifically with the crossword, again, we see the same pattern again, but with a more global scale. Which is, in fact, another one of these dull games that we're going to be talking about in the future. But for now, we talk specifically about the ending of this saga. Josh Wardle then got contacted by New York Times, who then purchased Wardle for actually a very small amount. I'm actually surprised. I thought it'd be way more, but it was only in the seven figures range, which is still a lot of money. Life-changing money. By the way, also, he made the game for his wife, which is really adorable, but it's not that adorable when you realize that he paid the money, he got the money from the guys who sold his game, and also, I guess, his wife's gift? I guess it wasn't really a gift. He just let her playtest it, but still, you know, hey. What are you gonna do, guys? Imagine being a husband is hard. You gotta cut him a little bit of slack, guys. Come on. Gotta cut him a little bit of slack. Anyway. The Wordle goes live on New York Times. They change, obviously, the code base to, instead of, I think, JavaScript, they change it to, like, React or something like that so they can put it on mobile. And then from that point on, the rest is history. More of these games start to crop up. It's like an infection. It's like a disease. Here's my progression, right? We start with Wordle. I'm like, oh, this is a pretty cool game. I played it a couple times. Great. Then, because I'm a big freaking math nerd, I'm a math nerd on my ass, there was the Nerdle, which is a variation of Wordle, but instead of guessing a word, right? I'm assuming that everyone knows what the Wordle is, okay? That's my assumption, okay? This is a very popular game, but these games specifically, I'm going to explain real quick. The Nerdle was a game, or is still a game, that requires you to make up an equation instead of a word. You have symbols, mathematical symbols, and also you have numbers that allow you to represent any mathematical equation. Then, obviously, you have the Twitch boom, specifically with variety streamers who play these types of games, right? Which obviously puts a lot of these games in the limelight. However, there were a lot more of these games that came out of the woodwork that eventually got into the eyes of a lot more people. You got Geography with Global, and I think, what was the other one? There's Global, and then there's another one. That's one of them's guessing the actual country, one of them's guessing the country based on the shape, and one of them's guessing on the country based on the distance from the country that you guessed. And then you have food games. You have Food Guesser, which is also interesting because it kind of breeds in to another game called GeoGuessr, which is a geography-based game where you have to guess your location based on the Google Map view, based on the view that you're currently seeing in Google Maps. You guess the location, you get more points the closer you are. They kind of created that in Food Guesser, but instead of you're guessing based on your location, you're guessing based on the type of food that you're seeing, right? So if you're seeing a specific type of food, like a pierogi, for example, you'd probably guess Poland, right? That kind of thing. Then, obviously, you have other kind of jokey but also very engaging guessers like Scrandle, which obviously plays off Wordle again, which bases itself off of Scran, which is a type of dish that you get at a Fool's Bowl game, right? Which obviously also has its own inside jokes and stuff like that. But basically, you're trying to guess which percentage of people would want to eat the food comparatively. Because some of them look great. Some of them look absolutely abysmal. Then, obviously, you have the trivia games. You have the Daily Dozen. You have Thrice, which is a five-question daily game. You have all these different types of games that particularly engage your brain, and also a bunch of games that are kind of more on the base of, say, you know, sparkle quizzes. Like, for example, you have film, you have music, you have Bandle, which is you guessing the music based on mid-eye tracks that slowly get revealed over time. You get the drums and the bass, then, like, the, say, the synth or the vocals or whatever, and they slowly get progressed over time, and you have to guess the song based on that. Then also you have, you know, I believe there's some other ones too. There's video games, all right? You got Guess the Game. You have Gamedle. You have a bunch of these other ones too. Then also you have so many more. So many more games that kind of come out of the woodwork on the premise of teasing your brain a bit, having a little bit of fun while you're trying to kill time. Let's see if I can pull up the sheet because I don't remember if I have access to this here at the moment. I should. Chat, I don't have the sheet. Oh no! I'm screwed! Oh no! I didn't transfer it to myself! How am I going to do the Wordle now? Well, we just have to go to the webpage. Wordle. We're doing the Wordle, guys! We're doing the Wordle on NewYorkTimes.com. Here we go. The Wordle. If you've done do the Wordle now. Pause this. Do the Wordle now. Come back. Thank you. Let's put a funny word in there. Let's do radio, because I'm on the radio. Ooh, one green, one all yellow. Very nice. The A is the same, so we can keep the A there. We could do like two R's to get that, and we could do like Perry. Perry is good. What the heck? Okay, so it has to be the last letter. So R has to be at the end. Very good. So it's something A, something something R. Let's see. It could be radar, except we don't have the R there. It could be lambdar. Here's the problem with these kind of games. I constantly always make up fake silly names and words and stuff, cuz Here's the thing. There's two types of people in the world. There's ocean minds and there's cabinet minds. Let me explain. Cabinet minds are people that are able to pull out information after thinking about it for a bit. You file through your cabinet in your brain and you're able to pull out the information like that. That's my friend Kai. She's very good at pulling out information on a dime like that. Me, I'm more of an ocean mind. Things aren't, I have a very vast and open mind, but at the same time, it's not organized in the slightest. So when I try to find information, I have to go through the thread of trying to find that information consistently. Like in this example right here, when I can't think of a word that has A as a second letter and R as the last letter, which is pissing me off, right? Let's crack up some other letters here. Let's do bushes. Oh, this is not a word. What do you mean bushes is not a word? I think it's an E. I think it ends with an E. So we'll do curry. Why do I keep doing the same letter? I'm stupid. Hold on. Fury is the same letter again. Flank? Flank's not bad. Yeah, we'll do that. Why not? Maybe there's an A somewhere. No. Okay. See, I would do bushy kai. However, there's or I already did Perry, which has a Y at the end. So, we can't do that. Instead, we're going to do K-A-X-X, I got this. Hold on. I'm going to use my brain sonic powers real quick. No. It can't be that. It has to be, hold on. Wait. Something, A, maybe it's C-K-R, no. Wait, is it R? No. I don't know if this is great radio, by the way. So if anyone's listening right now, please interrupt me if this is bad radio. We can always move on. There's no blocker here. We can always move on. let's do... Gubby. Gubby? Gummy. We could do gummy, or we can do gunky. That's not bad. That was only two letters. What am I doing? Well, at least we know. Wait. We at least know it's either K is either the first letter or the third letter. K is either the first letter or the third letter, guys. Help. K-X-X-R. K-E-R? Maybe it's K-R. 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 Car, Carter, Camer, Caber. I just guess at this point. Hold on, wait. K, is it Caker? Caker's not a word, guys. Wait, I just realized Caker's not a word. Taker's good. Thank you, Kai. Thank you. Taker. Taker. Oh, it's one letter. It's Waker. Or is it Baker? Oh, it could be either Waker or Baker. I'm going to Waker. It was Baker. It was Maker. I was so cooked. I was so cooked from the start. It was like a pivot, and I took the wrong one. What do you mean? What do you mean these aren't words? What do you mean?